Welcome back to Radio Times. Eddie Lang was born Salvatore Massaro in 1902 in South Philadelphia. In his short life, he turned the guitar into a solo instrument and is known now as the father of the jazz guitar, influencing generations of musicians who followed him. Lang played with bands including Paul Whiteman's orchestra and was a much sought-after accompanist, performing with violinist Joe Venuti, singer Bing Crosby, and many others. He made many recordings, some of which we will play today on Radio Times. This Monday is Eddie Lang Day here in Philadelphia, which we are celebrating today on Radio Times. We have three guests who have joined us in the studio, and two of them have brought guitars, and let me introduce them to you. To my left here is Richard Barnes, leader of the Blackbird Society Orchestra. That's a group of Philadelphia area musicians that specialize in early American jazz music. He's a guitarist and a photographer. And Richard Barnes, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me here today.
You're very welcome. Marty Gross is also with us, acclaimed guitarist and singer. I could go on and on in terms of describing him. And Marty Gross, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be here.
And our silent partner is guitarist and lawyer Jim Gicking. Let me begin with you, if I could, Richard Barnes, and just to kind of set the stage here, why is Eddie Lang so important?
Well, like you say, he's the father of jazz guitar. He defined the voice of jazz guitar in an era where guitar wasn't where it is today. Back in the teens and the early 20s, the banjo was a primary rhythm instrument in a band, mainly because you couldn't really hear a guitar over a large band. And Lang brought the guitar to the forefront, not only to be part of the band, but to be in front of the band, in front of several large bands, and just defined the whole way you would play a guitar.
Well, let me put the same question to you, Marty Gross, and you're holding your guitar there. As a guitar player yourself, what did Lang do for the guitar?
Well, he came along at the right time. He was playing guitar, of course, before the electric microphone came along, but when the electric microphone came along, he was there. He could handle it. He had a fine technique, a terrific tone. He made hundreds and hundreds of recordings. They're still finding recordings he made today. And in his short life, he only lived till 1933, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And he filled a need. All of a sudden, he could play a single string lead a melody on the guitar. That was unusual. And then he played wonderful accompaniments. So he was on all kinds of singers, good, bad, and different, in all kinds of bands. He was the first guy they thought of.
Well, and he even used heavier gauge strings, right?
In order to
bring out the sound of the
guitar.
I
don't think anybody, I've not heard anybody since then, and it's a long time since then, who got that sound out of an acoustic guitar. He had his own thing, and it's very strong and clear and bright.
Well, let's actually play one of those recordings, and this is Eddie's Twister, and perhaps Richard Barnes, if I could go back to you. Do you want to set this up for our listeners?
Well, this is actually a song he recorded with piano, a guitar and piano. A few years ago, I actually did a recording of this myself, but I think the music will just speak for itself. It's a great tune. And it's Eddie Lang and Arthur Shoot, I believe.
On the piano?
On the piano. Is it Marty? Is it Shutt on piano?
Yes, he's nodding his head. Let's listen, and this is Eddie's Twister.
Thank you.
Johnny's Twister, and that's Eddie Lang on guitar, Arthur Shute on piano. And I think, Marty Gross, what we hear listening to that, we hear obviously Eddie Lang playing, but we hear what he brings to that instrument. It's such a crisp sound.
Exactly. And he was really, you know, of the he and his pal Joe Venuti both grew up here in Philadelphia.
That's right.
Both played violin, studied violin in grade school and maybe in high school too, as far as I know, and they both are products of that wonderful Italian string tradition, where almost every family, somebody could play the mandolin, the guitar, the violin. I mean, whereas more Americanized families had pianos, and they sat around the piano and harmonized. It was naturally a different time.
Sure.
It's almost all that stuff has disappeared now. But Lang was just a tremendous talent. Both of them.
Well, let me go back to you, Richard Barnes, and just to fill in some of the autobiographical gaps here. So he was born in South Philadelphia to an immigrant family. The last name was Massaro, right?
And you can hear that in his playing as well, as Marty's saying. It's very classical and very traditional Italian in style, also blended with jazz. But yeah, you know, he was born in 1902. Lived on St. Albans Street, right next to the saloon, which, you know, out front of the saloon restaurant is his marker.
Oh, wow.
The historical marker.
Right.
And
his dad made...
Yes, his father was a luthier.
Was a luthier, so yeah. He made guitars.
Yep.
And was it a musical family? Do we know about the rest of the family?
I don't know about all the family, but like Marty said, you know, Lang started when he was in Campbell Music School, playing violin with Joe Venuti, and switched to banjo. Then he switched to guitar, so he could play several instruments.
And I would imagine, Marty, this was a part of South Philadelphia full of immigrants from Italy and other parts of the world. So I'm sort of trying to imagine what it would sound like down
there.
Well,
I'm told they had the barbershops down there had mandolins and guitars in them and violins, mm-hmm. and people were expected to come in the barbershop and start playing, you know.
Wow.
And it's just there's a tremendous Italian string tradition in that was around for a long time. Most of the American, later on, even in the 30s, the studio, so many of the studio guitar players that you heard on the radio and stuff were of Italian origin, you know, Italian descent.
Well, I'd actually love to have you, Marty Gross, and you, Jim Gicking, to perform one of Eddie Lang's song. This is from Monday On, and Marty, if you could set that up for us.
Well, this is a song that Eddie Lang and Joe Venuti joined Red McKenzie, who was a vocalist and who actually got music out of a comb and newspaper. So you have to hear the records. He's like, it sounds sort of like a muted trumpet. And they made this song, which was written by Harry Barris, who wrote a lot of pop songs and was singing at the time in a group called the Rhythm Boys with Bing Crosby. So Bing got his name on it.
Yeah.
And this is just they made a record. Venuti, Lang, Eddie Condon on banjo, and Red McKenzie on vocal and comb. No, I'm on tissue paper comb. Yes, that's it. Yeah. Okay.
So
it sort of goes a little like this, you know. Ah, from Monday on, my cares are over. From Monday on, I'll be in clover. We pick on Monday because it's wash day. So we'll wash all our blues away that day. From Monday on, the skies will look bright. Don't tell me different. I know I'm right. I know I'm right. I'm gonna start shouting, hey, hey, when she says love on her and obey, cause I'll be happy from Monday on.
That is great. And I thank you very much.
One chorus.
But in terms of putting that song and the way that Eddie Lang performed, what's different about that?
Well,
and I guess comparing it to
I don't pretend to be an Eddie Lang imitator, But he played wonderful bass lines on them. He played a lot of what we call oompa guitar, which you hear in country and bluegrass music and so forth nowadays a little bit. But his real strength was as much as a soloist was as an accompanist. And he did these wonderful bass figures and bass runs and was all over the place. I mean, when he started recording, electric recording came in.
Yes.
And so you could really hear him. And he was running from one studio to another. His discography is huge for a guy who died at an early age.
Go ahead, Richard.
And people would describe his playing sometimes as like piano-like in nature, because like Marty's saying, he's not just playing chords. He's running all these different bass lines. He's doing different chord inversions. He's suddenly throwing in solo parts. It's almost like he's playing with two hands, where other guitarists are just kind of strumming. He would be picking his more like a piano. Then he would take his pick, like Marty was playing with the pick, and he would palm it and start fingering. And then just
within the same song,
and then just pick up the pick again and start going. Wow. So very unpredictable and very unique style of playing.
When and how did his career take off? I mean, it sounds like he grew up in this very rich musical
tradition. He did. He was playing in Atlantic City, like Marty just said. He was also playing with Charlie Kerr's orchestra about 1925 at Lagon Cafe, I believe it was, at 15th and Chestnut, right around the corner.
Looking at
you there, Marty.
You know all these guys, right?
Yeah, Charlie Kerr was a Philadelphia dance band. He played banjo with that group.
And they were playing right around the corner from where we're going to be Monday night, from Monday on, at Lagon Cafe at 15th and Chestnut. And that's basically where he got his start, his professional start.
And he played with a wide variety of bands. You mentioned Bing Crosby. He played with Bing Crosby as well.
He became Bing Crosby's. He became the high toward the. He didn't know it was going to be the end of his career, but toward when he in the early 30s, when Bing got big, Bing hired him as his personal accompanist for $1,000 a week.
That's a lot of money.
A lot of money in 1932, and exactly, and not only that, but Lang kept when he Bing wasn't working every day. He'd do a week or so or 2 weeks at a theater, and then he'd have some space in between. And even so, in between, Lang was still running to the recording studios and had a full recording schedule. When he died, should I explain this? Yeah, he had been in the movie The Big Broadcast with Bing, and he says something like so long or goodbye or something like that. Big part. He has speaking part, and they saw in him the potential of having him be sort of Bing's sidekick, and so but he's something. There was some kind of a frog in his throat, and they decided this could be cured by a tonsillectomy. And that's what killed him. In 1932, you get tonsillectomy, and they couldn't stop the bleeding. You know, in those days, it probably took a 2 days to find out a guy's blood type, you know.
And he died at the age of
31 or something.
31, something like
30,
that.
It would have been 30.
Let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. More music as well. We are talking about Eddie Lang, and he, a musician. He changed the way people think about and play guitar. And this Monday in Philadelphia, it's Eddie Lang Day. We have three musicians who are joining us here in our Philadelphia studios. We're going to take a very short break, and then we'll come right back. Stay with us. I'm Marty Moscoane. I know you want the fall membership campaign to be over, and frankly, so do we. That will happen if you make a call right now. Here's the phone number, 1-888-345-9499, or you can pledge online at whyy.org. We've given you so many reasons to be a supporter. We get half of our operating budget from you. You hear unique, in-depth news and information every day. We offer a wide variety of local, national, and international programs. That's why you listen. Now you need to take that next step and become a member. Here's that phone number again. It's 1-888-345-9499. And again, you can pledge online at whyy.org. We want to make our goal by 5 o'clock this afternoon, and I'll be honest with you, we have a way to go. But we'll make it. If you take that next step. Again, here's that phone number, 1-888-345-9499. Thank you so much.
Piffero supports WHYY. Prince Frederick was baptized in 1616. His parents threw a 2-week dance party. Piffero's recreation takes place Saturday, October 23rd, and repeats Sunday, October 24th, with the baptism from 5 to 6, and after dinner, the ballet from 8 to 9. Guests include the New York Historical Dance Company, Parthenia Strings, and Boston's Blue Heron Choir. Delaware patrons travel on Piffero's Royal Celebration Bus. Details at piffero.com or 215-235-8469.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking about Eddie Lang, who was born in Philadelphia in 1902. He died in his early 30s after a botched operation, as our guest Marty Gross just described. And this Monday in Philadelphia, it's Eddie Lang Day, and our guests and other musicians will be at Chris's Cafe in Center City, Philadelphia. And that starts at 7 o'clock, 1421 Sansom Street. And our guests are Richard Barnes. He's a photographer, guitarist, leader of the Blackbird Society Orchestra, acclaimed guitarist and singer. Marty Gross is with us as well. And also with us is lawyer and guitarist Jim Gicking. And we are playing selections of Eddie Lang's recordings. And we also will be playing or hearing from two of our guests as well. Let me go back to you, Marty Gross, because you played with Joe Venuti, and we're going to play a song that features both Joe Venuti and Eddie Lang. But for our listeners, help us understand Joe Venuti and his role in this whole story.
When they were they were about contemporaries in age, and Lang and Venuti, they both went to the same school, and Lang, they both studied violin, and Venuti said it was a toss up, who would play the guitar and who would play the violin, and Venuti did play guitar.
Huh.
When I knew not great, it was many years since, but he actually recorded in England on guitar. And it's not terrific. It's not Eddie Lang, but he of course loved Eddie Lang. That was his guy. They were like the twins in the twin. They recorded numerous records. Venuti, of course, was famous raconteur, and one gets the impression that Lang was the sensible one of the kept things sensible, and because Venuti was given to pranks and carrying on and drinking heavily and so forth and so on. And so I did get a chance to play with Joe Venuti and talk to him. And
that's great.
It was a dream come true. I thought, gee, when I was like 12 years old and I first heard Venuti and Lang, and I said, my God, one day to be even to hear that, get close enough to see one of these guys. But then to play with them, I thought I'd died and gone to heaven.
I bet. Well, I do want to play a song called Wildcat, but let me go back to you, Richard Barnes, just in terms, I guess, of the kind of collaboration between these two musicians.
Like Marty said, they were just boyhood friends. They stayed friends and business partners through Lang's whole life. They recorded together as a duo. They did trios, quartets, five-piece bands. They were often booked as an act, so... Mm-hmm. When Gene Goldkett or Roger Wolf Kahn wanted Eddie Lang, he wanted Eddie Lang and Joe Venuti. They're just a really good working pair. Wildcat is a great song. It's featured in Paul Whiteman's film The King of Jazz. Makes about a 15-second appearance, and this is one of the songs that I'm going to play Monday night with my violinist Michael Salzberg, who will be doing the Joe Venuti part. But it's incredible song.
And this is a 1927. It's called Wildcat, and it's Joe Venuti and Eddie Lang. Let's listen. That's a song. Wildcat featuring Joe Venuti and Eddie Lang, and Richard Barnes would be pretty hard to top that, isn't it?
It is. It's a very difficult piece. You know, what they refer to as chamber jazz. It was jazz meant for listening to, not necessarily for dancing to. Up until that stage, jazz was dance music. And you know, what they started to do was referred to as chamber jazz, where it was just more of a listening type music.
And Marty, where would they perform, and or where would Eddie Lang perform? And you mentioned the fact that he played with so many different people, different bands, certainly Joe Venuti, back in the 20s and early 30s. Where were the hot spots?
Well, there was a dance that you mentioned that earlier. You mentioned the
Legon Cafe.
The Roger Wolf Kahn was a rich kid who liked to play, and his daddy gave him enough money to hire an orchestra. So he hired the best guys in New York and made records and played in a hotel. They had bands in hotels then, dancing and so forth. And he for example, had Lang and Venuti with him, as well as a banjo player and a tuba player and a bass, who doubled on bass. And they would come out and do little specialty things, like what you just heard.
Yes.
Just the two of them would stand in front of a microphone and do stuff. And then, of course, both of them were in and out of this, can be heard on hundreds of less than exciting records where they're just getting, be playing a sidemen, bringing.
So this was their life. I mean, it was all about performing and music.
There was, you have to remember, in those days, in the 20s and in the early 30s, he died in 33, so... there was no such thing as a a jazz club or a jazz places where you went to them to dance.
Yeah.
Went to clubs to dance and to see a show, and they would be part of the show. They'd step out in front and do a little thing, and the rest of the time they played in the dance orchestra.
Can I put you on the spot? And I don't know if is there something that's Eddie Lang about playing, or a certain kind of, the way he would pull the strings, or a certain kind of signature feature Eddie Lang.
Well, he started out on his first recordings. I don't know if everybody has a guitar nowadays. So he playing flat top guitar, like a Martin guitar, flat top with a sound open hole in it.
Yes,
and then he graduated to arch top guitar, which is like a cello, where the top
more
is
sound,
carved,
right?
He had one with a hole in it, but the L4, I won't talk about that now. But finally winding up with what's called the L, which these are Gibson L5s. This is 1928, right. And this is a 1928 too. But it's been he ended up with these kinds of guitars with the arch top, and they give a more brilliant, brighter tone and stuff, and project more. And Lang, I've talked to lots of guitar players and even people who knew him and stuff, and nobody could quite figure out how he got his sound.
Oh, is that right?
It's he used heavier gauge strings than anybody else practically, and he got this brilliant, bright, clear sound. And he played in what would be now considered a very perhaps simple direct style. I've often wondered where he got his melodic sense from. He almost plays like a horn sometimes, like a trumpet. Do 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 ba do deet. That kind of stuff. Like a.
Go ahead,
and
Richard.
You have to remember, he wasn't copying anybody. You really couldn't copy any jazz guitarists then, because there were no other jazz guitarists before then. I mean, I'm sure there were some around, but not like listening in the 30s to somebody who played in the 20s. So. He was probably listening to people like Armstrong and, copying some horn riffs. The archtop guitars, they punch more, they're more brilliant. The strings sit up very high, so it's really a workout on your hands to play a guitar like that and get that kind of tone. Guitarists nowadays have very light strings and very low action. It's very easy to play.
And you plug in, too.
But yeah, and you can plug in, but these are really difficult instruments to play like he was playing.
Well, let me just quickly reintroduce the three of you, and I do want to set up actually a performance of Eddie Lang on Rachmaninoff's Prelude in C sharp minor, just to kind of show off his facility on the guitar. We are talking about Eddie Lang, born in Philadelphia in 1902. He died in 1933. So he lived a very short life, but had a huge influence on the guitar, on the jazz guitar. And this Monday, in Philadelphia. It's Eddie Lang Day, and our guests, along with other musicians, will be performing at Chris's Jazz Cafe in Center City, Philadelphia. The music actually starts at 7 o'clock, and that's at 1421 Sansom Street. Richard Barnes with us, leader of the Blackbird Society Orchestra. Acclaimed guitarist and singer Marty Gross is also with us, and lawyer Jim Gicking is with us as well. I do want to play this this performance of Eddie Lang on guitar, playing Sergei Rachmaninoff's Prelude in C-sharp minor. And anything you want to say, Richard, in terms of setting this up for our listeners?
Again, I think this is just the whole basis of Lang's style. He was trained in classical music. He had the Italian traditional Italian music background and brought that into the jazz age, basically. When you listen to something like this, you can see where he gets his roots from. But to take a piece like this that was written for piano,
yes,
and be able to turn it into a guitar piece is phenomenal.
It sure is.
And his wife, Kitty, would refer to it later. She would say he would just sit and practice this over and over and be worried he couldn't do it in one take to record it. But I think when you hear this, you can see he did practice well.
Let's listen. Eddie Lang's adaptation of the piano prelude composed by Russian composer Sergei Rachmaninoff. That's the prelude in C-sharp minor, although Marty Gross, he transposed it to E minor.
That's correct.
And that made it work on the guitar, I guess.
Right.
Now, we were talking about perhaps other guitarists that might have influenced him, or even classical guitarists at the time that might have influenced him?
Yes. I think it was it in 28, late 28 or 29. I think it was 28, 29. I had a friend who was there who told me, he said, all the guitar players in New York, all the studio guys and the jazz guys, Carl Kress, Dick McDonough, Lang, et cetera, were there to hear Andre Segovia's first American concert, and I believe it was a town hall in New York, and it had a big influence on a lot of them. They got classical guitar music. They studied it. They listened to the few records that were available, and it influenced them a lot. And this, of course, is earlier than that.
Yes, this is actually
this was also published as a with piano accompaniment as a banjo workout.
Really?
Yeah, and the banjo players are from the late 19th century and early 20th century. They had some wizards. Of course, it wasn't the guitar. It only had four strings in those days, or five. The fifth string being that little high string.
Right.
But they also played marches and polkas and things, you know, technically quite challenging. But they didn't get this sound.
And we should say this was one take, Richard. And no editing here. This is 1927.
No
overdubs.
You sit down and you do it live. And that was a great example too of how he would switch from using a pick and then hide it in his palm and go to finger picking, and then right back to the pick again.
Well, I want to play another piece. This is I'm Coming, Virginia. And again, Richard, I wonder if you could set this up for us. For
this is a great song. This is a classic in early jazz music recorded by many bands. I'm not sure which take you're going to play here. But
Frankie Trombauer and his orchestra?
Yeah, this is the definitive one. Yes, it's just a beautiful piece. It was also recorded by Bing Crosby and a ton of other bands. But this is absolutely beautiful.
And this is with clarinetist Bix
Beiderbecke.
Yep. And let's listen. Hold on just 1 second. We're talking and listening, and we're on the radio, and that's I'm Coming Home, and it's the Frankie Trombauer and his orchestra, and, of course, Eddie Lang on guitar, and that was cornetist Bix Beiderbecke. And you want to add? Go ahead,
Well, Lang was also known by some of the old-timers that I talked to that had actually seen him in person and heard him. They say his strongest suit was as an accompanist. Although they liked his soloing, by that time guys were doing wizardry, blah, 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 a lot of notes, and they sometimes thought his soloing was a little bit simple-minded, but I didn't, of course. And there's another thing I forgot to mention is he sometimes played a lot of bent notes, blue notes. He often functioned on blues. He made recordings with blues artists. And where he got that from was not from records, because Eddie Lang himself recorded probably the first recorded blues solo with the Mound City Bluebirds, Deep Second Street Blues, mm-hmm. is it? And he's going ding ding, pushing the notes and everything like that. So obviously there was somewhere in Philadelphia there were some guys playing the blues.
There was no one to copy from, like Marty's saying. You couldn't listen to records and other people playing and get your idea of what you were going to do. He was probably listening to horn players or live people, blues players, but incorporated everything in his style.
Well, the Eddie that we're talking about, Eddie Lang, and our guests are all intimately interested and familiar with his work. This Monday in Philadelphia, it's Eddie Lang Day, and our guests are Richard Barnes, Marty Gross, and we also have Jim Gicking with us as well. We're going to play some more music after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hi, I'm Marty Moscowain. If you've never become a member of WHYY, or you've let your membership lapse, or you're new to public radio, or you're new to the Delaware Valley, I'm talking to you. Now is the time to become a subscriber, a member of WHYY. Most of the people who listen are not subscribers, and frankly, that's no way to run a radio station, especially a public radio station. We depend on listener support for a substantial portion of our budget. We will meet our overall overall goal when you join in. So here's the phone number and do your part. It's 1-888-345-9499. You'll be glad you did your part to make sure that WHYY and public broadcasting stays healthy. Here's that phone number once again. It's 1-888-345-9499. You can also pledge online at WHYY.org. Thank you very much for making that call.
The Academy of Natural Sciences presents a new exhibit, Cruisin' the Fossil Freeway, with Ray Troll and Kirk Johnson, open October 23rd through January 2nd. Cruisin' takes you on a wacky, wild, and sometimes weird trip through America's prehistoric past, as imagined by an artist and a paleontologist. See fossil-inspired artwork, as well as real fossils, including a saber-toothed tiger and a killer pig. For details, 215-299-1000. Or online at ansp.org. The Academy supports WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. And we are talking about Eddie Lang, this Monday in Philadelphia is Eddie Lang Day. This is the city where he was born. He's credited with revolutionizing the guitar, making it a solo and jazz instrument. And we have three guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studios. Richard Barnes, leader of the Blackbird Society Orchestra. He's a guitarist and a photographer. Acclaimed guitarist and singer Marty Gross is with us as well. And we have guitarist and lawyer Jim Gicking with us on Radio Times. We're joking that he's here just to make sure we all behave ourselves, but he will be playing us out along with Marty Gross at the very end of the show. Let me toss this back to you, Richard Barnes, and just talk a bit about this event on Monday, and Mayor Michael Nutter declared this Eddie Lang Day. How did all this happen?
Well, it's a long story, but let's see how short I can make it.
Okay.
I've had this band since 1994. It's a hard band to book because we play a very obscure type of music, and we've always focused on Eddie Lang's music.
Because it's so great.
It is.
It's really so much.
Time that, thank God for Boardwalk Empire now and making 20s music kind of trendy and fashionable again, because, I think it's going to bring it to the public a little bit more, and people will start to get exposed to it and enjoy it and see what it really was all about. This started off as a small idea in the beginning of the year. I just wanted to book myself and my violinist and go out and promote Lang and Venuti, and was having a hard time doing it. And someone just said, well, if you want to do anything, you should just do it yourself. So I said, well, maybe we'll do something. So I wanted to make it official somehow, and I contacted Mayor Michael Nutter's office, and they issued me a proclamation declaring Eddie Lang Day in Philadelphia. And at that point, I thought, well, now I really have to do something, because now we have an actual event. So we tried to find a venue. We found Chris's. We started getting musicians to come in. I started getting corporate sponsors, which was really nice, because that took it into a different level. John Pierce Strings and Dietz and Watson were very instrumental in helping us. And suddenly we had some money that we could work with. But all the musicians were donating their time and coming and playing for free. So I said, well, we should get a charity going with this and try to help somebody out somehow. So we're going to try to get a foundation set up in Eddie Lang's name to help children, underprivileged children, discover music programs.
Oh, that's great.
And we have from 7 to 8 o'clock will be the quiet hour. So we're going to have myself playing and some solos and duets. At shortly before 8 o'clock, we'll present the proclamation. We have Furco String Band coming in. They'll play probably about 4 or 5 songs, and then Blackbird Society Orchestra. Marty and Jim will be following that. At 9 o'clock, we have Hop and John Orchestra, which will be the Cornbread Five, their smaller band coming in. And then Jeff Lee Johnson and John Dichter at 11 o'clock doing the Lang Johnson stuff. So it's a full overview of what Lang did throughout his career, from small solos and duos to blues to big 11-piece formal 20s dance music.
Well, congratulations on pulling that together. And for you, Marty, this must be, since you knew Joe Venuti and this music is so much a part of your life, must feel pretty good to be part of Eddie Lang Day.
It's great. Besides anything that pushes jazz, whatever that is, I don't know what jazz is anymore because it's so many different things, but this kind of music, I should mention that Lang and Venuti were a major influence on Django Reinhardt and Stephan Grappelli, who their whole thing started with imitating Lang and Venuti.
And that's kind of where the history books start
when
it comes to jazz guitar. But Django and Grappelli will admit, and they've been interviewed where they say that they were listening to Lang and Venuti, and they said we should do it what they're doing. And I'm not saying they're copying, but they had at least something to look back on.
A violin, and they got the Hot Club of Philadelphia doing that now.
Right.
So there's a little something.
But they had something to look back on and try to borrow from, so where Lang and Venuti were starting it. And unfortunately, they were just overlooked and forgotten about, for the most part, in the history of it
all.
Well,
you have changed that. Let me go back to you, Marty Grossen. We mentioned briefly Lonnie Johnson, but yeah. I want you to talk a bit about the collaboration between Lonnie Johnson and Eddie Lang.
Well, that's very interesting. Early on, in the 20s, it was quite unusual, actually, for black and white musicians to get into a studio together, and without any hoopla or anything. Lang appears on quite a few records. He was like, I think he was like the okay house
was,
guitarist,
which is
stuff.
Why I hear him in the back of
and
everybody.
And he appears on records with Bessie Smith, with the blues guitarist Lonnie Johnson,
Ruth
with
Edden.
Texas Alexander, who was a blues shouter from guess where, and Texas Alexander unfortunately couldn't keep meter, so Lang had to keep pushing him in the right direction, which he does very skillfully, without hurting his feelings, apparently. And Lang also recorded with Louis Armstrong, won a classic record called Knocking a Jug. You can hear him. And like that there. He was he with the, I think he was on some of the records that the Dorsey brothers did with Louis.
Yeah, they all played together. The all-star band had Dorsey and Jack Teagarden, Benny Goodman. Well, all the people that would go on into the 40s to be big band leaders were in bands in the 20s.
Well, and did they play with, when he was playing with Lonnie Johnson, would they play out? Would they play to integrated audiences?
They played in the records. As far as I know, they played in a recording studio.
Yeah, recording studio.
I did have it just an aside. I did have a chance to meet Lonnie Johnson and to talk to him when I was working in Toronto. I asked him about Eddie Lang, and he said Eddie Lang was the greatest musician he'd ever played with.
Really?
That's what he told me, but... I can't see that Eddie Lang trumps Louis Armstrong, but nevertheless, he's held
there.
Him. He said, "There's nothing I could do that he couldn't right away pick up on it." Eddie had a very quick ear. You know?
And even in an article with his wife Kitty, she said the same thing. He had gone to see Segovia several times, and she remarked, how wonderful she thought he was. And Eddie just sat down and just started doing the things that they had heard.
He would
that
hear
night.
It, and he could reproduce it on the guitar. Mm-hmm. Well, we've talked a bit about Bing Crosby, but I want to play a song with Bing Crosby singing with the Paul Whiteman Orchestra, Eddie Lang on guitar, Joe Venuti on this as well. And this is a song called After You've Gone. And anything we should listen for, Richard? I mean, except that it just sounds fabulous.
How they all complement each other. As Marty was saying, Eddie had a way of just sitting down and just following what you were doing and leading you at the same time. He could just compliment every note of a singer, whether the singer was incredible like Bing or maybe not so good, just coming to the studio and recording. It was just a perfect match.
Let's listen. This is a song called After You've Gone.
After you've gone, left me crying. After you've gone, there's no denying. You'll feel blue, you'll feel sad. You'll miss the dearest pal you ever had. There'll come a time, now don't forget it. There'll come a time when you'll regret it. Someday, when you grow lonely, your heart will break like mine and you'll want me only. After you've gone away.
Just a little taste of After You've Gone. That sounds really good, Richard Barnes.
Yeah, it must have been great to be a musician back then.
Yeah. Marty, you mentioned, what is jazz, but I'm also curious about how you think jazz came to Philadelphia. What route you think it took?
95, right? North.
See, a train in that at that time. Gee, that's a great question. It seeps in. They say it was, New Orleans is the cradle of jazz and so forth. And in a sense, that's correct. But there was it very soon, or almost you can't almost reckon what the time difference is. People were playing ragtime and jazz in Baltimore, in New York, in all over the place. It's very hard to know. Chicago. And they had different styles. I would say that there were two main influences, and the East Coast was more legit. East Coast guys were often more legit, sort of studied, and they were absolutely overwhelmed when the New Orleans guys, many of them like Louis Armstrong via Chicago and others coming up, hit the scene. And they changed the... made it much looser and
sure.
And swingier.
Sure,
you know?
Sure. And of course, lots of homegrown talent as well.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. Philadelphia has always been very instrumental in music and still is. I mean, always has been. And then keep in mind, right across the river in Camden, you
sure.
have RCA. So a lot of, you know, artists were coming up here and recording.
That's right. That's right.
And was Eddie Lang, was he popular with audiences? I mean, clearly musicians.
Here's an idea of how popular he was. In 1937,
okay.
in England, a Melody Maker took a poll of jazz and swing musicians, and everyone, you know, voted, you know, who their favorite was. Eddie Lang had more votes than anybody on the list. I think the next highest was Louis Armstrong at 1,200. Eddie Lang had about 1,800.
Wow.
4 years after his death, he was still the most popular jazz musician in England. Probably over here as well, but I haven't seen any magazines
polls,
from here.
No, the polls, you couldn't vote for somebody who was dead in the American polls, in the Downbeat polls, and the Metronome polls. Those were two magazines. The popularity of Eddie Lang... was put at a test when, unfortunately, after he died and they had the funeral. He's buried here in Holy Cross Cemetery, and they have a very nice
gravestone.
Tombstone with Eddie Lang sculpted in bas relief, you know, and with lightning coming out behind.
Oh wow!
Signifying radio.
Oh,
you know.
Fabulous!
And unfortunately, when they got down there and they had the service and everything in the church, many of the ladies were not sticking to the doctrine. They wanted to get a glimpse of Bing, who came down from New York for Eddie's funeral.
Aww.
He was, you know.
Well, he was Bing Crosby.
But he was
right.
With musicians. I mean, his name was... It was like with the same as Bix Beiderbecke's name,
yeah.
You know.
Well, there's a picture of the funeral where they're bringing the coffin out of the parents' house, which was then on South 15th Street, and you can't see the street. It's just thousands
it's
of people,
packed
with people.
Yeah.
But why? I mean, maybe this is just me, but why don't we know more about Eddie Lang? I mean, if he was so acclaimed, so talented, so beloved in his lifetime, I mean, obviously he died young.
Well, everyone's going to have an answer to that, I guess.
Yeah, what's yours, Richard?
Well, my personal feeling is that you have the Roaring Twenties, you know, America's a big party, and then the Depression comes in. And I guess we just all forget about it. And by the time the Depression ends and we come out of it, you've got talking pictures now with these big, lavish ballads, and you've got swing music coming along. And then you have Django, then you have the electric instruments coming in, and everyone just kind of forgets about the 20s, and then that's it. And then maybe it wasn't as commercial to sell. It's the same thing with our band. We're a jazz band. We're a 20s jazz band, but you don't classify us as jazz by today's standards, so it's really hard to book a band like this.
What do you think, Marty Gold?
Well, Lang, time marches on, and musicians are fickle, especially when they were fully employed, as they were in the 20s and 30s. Music, the guys who worked in the studios, some of Lang's pals, you know, that he'd recorded with, Bunny Berrigan, Carl Kress, Dick McDonough, two couple of guitar players, They were making money hand over fist. Radio was the thing. It was free, and these guys were playing 2-3 shows, rehearsals every day. Even in people in Cincinnati and Philadelphia had radio stations with live musicians on staff, and they were desperate to keep up. Studio guys are always desperate to keep up with the dernier cri, you know, the latest thing.
Sure.
They got it. Oh, don't be called old-fashioned. You got to get everybody's jitterbugging now. Play jitterbug music quick, you know. Learn it quick. Get with it. And that culture sort of overwhelms all of a sudden a guy like Eddie Lang and guys from the 20s are considered somewhat dated.
Well, I'm glad that you all are bringing him back, and we've had a chance to both talk about Eddie Lang, hear some of his music, and Marty Gross and Jim Gicking are going to play us out. I thank you both, gentlemen. Before we do that, though, Richard Barnes, I want to thank you very much. And is there a website, a place where people can go to get information?
Yes, there is. And again, thank you very much for having us
welcome.
On today. It's going to definitely help the success of the event. It's a long website. It's eddielangdayinphiladelphia.blogspot.com. So Eddie Lang Day in Philadelphia.blogspot.com. Now, this will also mark the first annual Eddie Lang Jazz Festival, which we'll do again next year. So Eddie Lang Jazz Festival.com will be the updated website.
Well, I thank all three of you for joining us today on Radio Times, and we will put that website on our Facebook page so that people can check it out. And I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and thank you so much for joining us. You're listening to WHYY-FM Philadelphia, your member, and WHYY.org, member-supported public media. We're going to close things out with Pickin' My Way, performed by our guests Marty Gross and Jim Gicking.
What? And good morning. I'm Susan Greenbaum here with Dennis Devine. We are the producers of Radio Times, reminding you that it is our fall membership campaign. Give us a call, 1-888-345-9499, or pledge online, whyy.org. Dennis, that was fun. A little musical interlude for Radio Times.
Yeah, this is one of the things that we really enjoy, Susan and I, and our fellow producers, Debbie Builder and Patty Leswing. And Patty actually put this hour together. And it's one of the things we enjoy, and we hope you enjoy, the wide range of topics that you can hear on Radio Times. I mean, we started out this morning with one of our political roundups for the first hour, and then we totally switched gears. And Marty's great at this ability to sort of, okay, you're in the midst of the election cycle in the first hour, and now we're jumping back to the 20s and going back into sort of an overlooked jazz legend, but right here in Philadelphia. And if you appreciate that as well, if you look for the diversity of topics and enjoy the range of political and cultural topics that Radio Times covers, we hope you'll go past just listening and also go into supporting and membership. And you can do that by calling 1-888-345-9499, and that's 1-888-345-WHYY, or you can go online to our website. There's a whole lot of things there, but especially there's an online contribution place where you can make an online donation, and that's at whyy.org.
One of the things we do at Radio Times every Friday is review the week and look at the week ahead. But it's important to review the week. And I'm looking at what we did this week, Dennis, and we went around the world. So you, our listeners, went around the world with us as Marty is the tour guide. We talked with Robert Kaplan about the Indian Ocean. We talked about another kind of waterway, the Delaware River. We talked politics with Rebecca Traister. We did a show on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. It was an interesting week for that law and policy. You listen, you travel around the world with us. You're part of our community. And as part of our community, we ask you to sort of step up and become an active part of our community by becoming a member of WHYY. The number is 1-888-345-9499. WHYY.org is the place to pledge online. We have started off strong with our membership campaign, hoping to finish equally as strong. You have the power, and it's important that we hear from each and every one of you.
Yeah, and Radio Times, you know, we're entering our 25th.